Welcome back to Startup Dugout by Dell Technologies, a podcast series where we talk to entrepreneurs from India's biggest tech startups to go back to that time when. That time when you needed allies. That time when you needed sound advice and good mentors. That time when you were looking for the right tech partners who can accelerate growth. The host for this week's episode of Startup Dugout is Suchita Salwan, the founder and CEO of Little Black Book, and a member of Forbes India and Forbes Asia's 30 Under 30 lists. Little Black Book, or LBB, started as a humble Tumblr blog. Today, it is India's largest online discovery platform with an objective to seek out, empower, and scale India's lifestyle businesses. On Startup Dugout by Dell Technologies, we discover how industry leaders respond to challenges in their entrepreneurial journeys. We also learn how initiatives like Dell for Startups empowers companies through innovative technology, strategic guidance, proven practical capabilities, and expert consulting assistance. On this episode, Suchita sits down with Amit Ramani, founder and CEO of Office Space Solutions. Since its inception in April 2015, Office has evolved from being a co-working network to a fully tech-enabled workspace solutions platform that provides a wide range of products based on workspace requirements to cater to the modern workforce. Office has a member base of more than 1,500 companies, ranging from Fortune 500 businesses to emerging startups. They particularly focus on customer centricity. It currently has a network of co-working spaces with 150 centers and 88,000 seats across 17 cities. On this episode, they talk about the effects of the pandemic on the world of work, creating spaces for the emerging Gen Z workforce, and the role of technology in the workspace in a sharing economy.
So Amit, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, Office has had quite the journey in the last 8 years from providing just-in-time space solutions rather than the traditional long-term office space setups to now hosting a plethora of different products and services catering to the more hybrid model of a workspace that's obviously gained a lot of popularity in a post-COVID world. How easy or challenging have all the transitions and changes been for you?
So I think clearly, COVID was a big, change moment in the lifestyle of what I would call as the commercial real estate arena. And, pre-COVID, if you looked at the industry, it was primarily being driven by SMEs and maybe, mid-sized corporates and startups, right? They were early adopters of co-working. So our client base primarily used to focus almost 70-75% on those three areas. And when COVID hit, obviously, it changed the world completely. Because if people are never going to come back to work, then I would have had to look for something else to do. And so we all got paranoid. And, clearly what we felt was that, if people did not take that plunge to come back, because it was the largest human experiment where all of us probably for anywhere between 3 to 6 months were working primarily from home. And then things started stabilizing. And I think what we saw early signs of was that the enterprises were fence sitters before COVID and clearly took a plunge into coming on to co-working and the flex space arena. And once that happens, because they, if you look at ITIS consumption, that's almost 35-40% of the total commercial real estate take up. And when that started happening and larger companies started coming into it, the market just boomed. And we saw early signs of it. We were essentially 50 locations prior to COVID in March of 2020. And then we hit the pedal hard. And now today we are 150 locations, almost 90,000 seats in 17 cities. Second thing which we understood was that people will come back to some format, right? Indian homes are not structured to be everybody be able to work from home, you know, be it the husband, the wife, or kids, you know, doing their online schooling, etc. So we've always knew that people will come back to some other space, right? Now, what that other space could be, it could be the conventional space, could be co-working, could be something near home, could be a coffee shop. So we felt that, you know, clearly we had to expand the platform because our customers came to us for co-working pre-COVID, but post that, we started what we call as office enterprise solutions, where we did managed office with large companies. We started Office Transform, which was basically our design and build turnkey fit-out business. We started Office Care, which was almost, now today has 3,000 people and is our facility management business, both hard and soft FM services. And then we have Office Now, which is our on-demand solution. So you can book a meeting room for an hour or a seat for a day. And those are all options that are available to our customers. So we went from co-working to expanding the network to basically becoming a platform.
So real verticalization and going deep into the sort of lifespan of all things workforce. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what's the agility that you think you yourself as well as your team has had to bring into the culture of all things office to deliver on this, right? Because this isn't going to be the, you know, we're all entrepreneurs. It's never one challenge. It'll be COVID one. It'll be something else 2 to 3 years later. So culturally, how have you transformed or used all things COVID to transform your agility to adapt to changing work demands?
Yeah, so clearly, I think if we look at the whole last 3 years, I think the reason we survived was because we were on the move, right? We were agile to react to what was happening. If you ask somebody in April of 2020 what would happen in 3 years, I think nobody had the crystal ball, right? Including us. I mean, we did not know what was going to happen. Half of our customer base left in the first 3 months. As I said, a large portion of our business used to be small companies and mid-sized companies and startups, and they were on shorter tenures and lower cohort sizes, and they left overnight. So half of the business just went away. So I think from our standpoint, what we were very focused on was on our customers. And I think what we have truly understood over the last 3 years is if you do right by the customer, they will stick by you. So one, I think the teams understood the customer centricity as a very, very important lesson during COVID. Anybody that we took care of, anybody that we bent over backwards to accommodate has stayed with us or continued to expand with us. Second, I think the teams understood that in a very short time, when such a catastrophic event and a once in a century event happens, you have to be ready to respond, right? And because our teams came with that kind of a DNA where a portion of the team was clearly hospitality focused, so it was customer centric. There was a portion of the team that was very, very sales oriented, and there was a portion of the team that's very strategic in nature. And I think all of us came together to deliver on the promise of our customer as creating a healthy and safe workspace. So I think that was the second. And as I said, you know, we expanded into a platform. So today, from one source of revenue, we have 4 sources of revenue, almost equally distributed. Still, obviously, co-working and managed office contribute about 75% of business, but the other businesses, which are young businesses, contribute 25%. So today, if anything was to happen, we could shift gears and easily be able to accommodate what our customers were demanding at that stage. And you're right, I can't predict where the next event will happen, but I think we have future-proofed the business. So about 75% of our business today is in partnership with the landlord, which means that ups and downs of commercial real estate, we will truly deal with them as partners. Because if I was purely in a straight lease business, and as I say this to my team, and I've talked about it openly in public forums as well, is that if we were pure straight lease business in March of 2020, we would have gone bankrupt. So we have diversified the risk by, you know, mitigating it by partnering with the landlords, asking them to put majority of the capital. And that model has been successful. Out of the 150 plus locations, 120 locations today are in partnership with the landlord.
That's awesome. So, you know, you spoke a lot about customer centricity. I think another thing that's come out in your past interviews has also been thinking about design, right? And spatial design as a key differentiator for all things office. Now, you've seen boomers, you've seen Gen X, you've seen the millennial workforce, and now you have this whole new breed of customers, which is the Gen Z consumer base entering the workforce and, you know, throwing all sorts of spinners with their own demands and needs. Talk to us a little bit about how has office responded to the very unique needs of Gen Z consumers and a little bit about the process over there?
So we sit in a very interesting cusp in history where all four generations are coexisting. Gen Xers, Boomers, you know, Gen Zs and the Millennials, right? All of them come together in various formats. All of them have different demands and expectations out of the workspace. The good news is that the Gen Zs, in a recent survey by Deloitte, 60% of them hold a lot of value for the workspace. So I think clearly from our standpoint, we try to focus on a kind of a workspace design that essentially resonates with majority of the consumers at whatever age brackets they are in. And I think that happens through creating something that is visually appealing. Also, it gives optionality to people. So you should have the ability to have just a me space where I can concentrate and do our work. We should have sort of a us space where we can all congregate. And then there should be a space where you can, you know, focus and do work with your external partners. So I think if it all comes together with the choice is given, I think that's the second point. And third, I think clearly there should be enough for everybody. So if you come to our workspaces, you know, there are collaborative zones where people can interact with each other. There are gaming zones where you can do some bit of recreation. There is a cafe where you have food options. Then you have a pantry space where people can bring in their own and have, you know, their meals, etc. Then we have some larger facilities. We have training spaces. So we provide enough and more amenities in our spaces that it kind of resonates with all age brackets, right? Maybe a cafe is cool for a Gen Z, but maybe you're having a space where people can have their own lunch is cool for a, you know, a baby boomer that brings it from home. So I think if you have optionality, that works really well, and amenities that talks to people. Also, you know, if you were to look at post-COVID, the quality of the workspace and the design is very, very important. The whole factor of well-being, right? We are in the process of getting all our workspaces well-certified, which is essentially focusing on the health and well-being of our customers today coming to our workspaces. So I think some of these elements have come into play, and we have adapted, and you know, we are at version 5 of our standard program, which you know, in a small journey of 8 years, is the 5th version. In our gold product, we are at version 2. It's about a 2-year-old product. So I think we continue to hear the customer what works and then kind of respond and redesign the spaces for them.
Absolutely. So I'd like to talk to you about your ideas on technology in a sharing economy. You've spoken about how tech can enable wider connectivity and facilitate productivity in a workspace, that too within a sharing economy. And, you know, as you mentioned right now, really giving the optionality and the flexibility for a customer to choose who they want to be on that day, right? And the kind of work style that they want to have. Where are we in terms of technologically realizing this goal? And, you know, when you think of the interplay of tech and the sharing economy and the workspace, what does the future look like?
So basically for us, if we look at the technology, we are a technology-enabled business. We are not a pure technology business, but we look at it as a, you know, space as a service, right? So SaaS from that standpoint, and technology plays an enablement role for us. The way we look at technology in our business is in three parts. One, how does the customer engage with our technology, right? So from a visitor management system to an app that helps them order food and beverage in my space, or provide feedback to our community members, or engage with my community, or get offers from various alliance partners. I think that's the front end. And that's one part where our visitor management and our app and our website kind of play into that piece for our customers. The second piece is, how do we do things better for our spaces? So this would be our customer satisfaction scores. This would be tracking how our sales network is happening, tracking our renewals. So this is the digital transformation that we have spent over the last 4 years to make sure that we make the business more efficient in various aspects of customer centricity. Could be a better sales cycle, could be a better renewal cycle for us. So we've used technology to enable all of those pieces. And then final piece is that, how do we make the facility more efficient? So from a office care app that allows me to track how my housekeeping is going on, to my electricity bills, to my electricity consumption, to my HVAC consumptions, to making sure that we have enough and more technology that we are making our facilities as energy efficient as possible, and then as streamlined from management standpoint of our team members that manage the hygiene of the spaces and multiple other areas. So I think these are three factors: customer facing pieces, which enable them to have a great experience, then the digital transformation piece, which allows us to be as a better business, increase our efficiency. And then the third piece is the efficiency of how technology plays a role in getting better productivity out of the infrastructure that we manage today.
So as a follow-on to that, let me ask you, what is your favorite out of the three universes that you mentioned? What's been your favorite application of tech at office? Any super interesting, you know, application that you can tell us about? And also, what role has Dell played in your journey so far?
So I think from our standpoint, clearly whatever the customer interacts with or the pieces of that app and website that they do is the most interesting piece, because we get to learn about their behaviors, what their requirements are. You know, I mean, for example, we curated a system where, you know, customer sitting at their desk could order food and it would get delivered to them, right? So I think we keep building on those, some of those features there. As far as Dell goes, I think what I appreciate the most about Dell is their ability to continue to innovate, right? And then continue to, you know, listen to the customer and build products that are very, very customer focused, right? I mean, be it from what they're offering in terms of the hardware that's being there and the ability to support some of the software. But I think most importantly, they listen to the customer and what their demands are and then react. And that's why they're one of the top companies, you know, providing hardware, software, and multiple other solutions from the customer standpoint. So we obviously, you know, look at such companies and draw inspiration from them to look at, you know, how we can be agile, how we can be more innovative, and how can obviously we scale up and be at a scale of a similar Dell type company.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
It's wonderful to hear how Office has gone from providing just-in-time office space solutions to now using technology to help facilitate modern workspaces, and how Dell has been able to contribute to that. Now, apart from offering trustworthy digital solutions, Dell for Startups helps companies reach their goals and defines new routes for their success. They help startups in India to accelerate their digital journey and solve some of the biggest challenges in the country, keeping Dell's core purpose in the forefront, creating technologies that drive human progress. We now head back to Startup Dugout by Dell Technologies to hear from Amit Ramani about how Office has expanded beyond Tier 1 cities and the role of the modern workplace in a post-pandemic world.
Awesome. We're back and we're talking to Amit today. So Amit, moving from tech to real estate, where you obviously got your start, Office now has 150 centers across 17 Indian cities. And even though you started out in the metros, you've now expanded to tier two cities as well. Talk to us a little bit in terms of, you know, what are the commercial real estate challenges that you see the second you step out of the top 8 or 10 odd cities in India?
I think, you know, clearly we've been talking about tier two cities for the last 18 months. And I think, you know, people need to actually go to those cities to understand what's going on. It's transformation at a different level altogether, right? I mean, if you were to go to cities like Indore, you were to go to Nagpur, you were to go to Bhubaneswar, right? Take an example of a city like Nagpur. Maybe it's not on anybody's radar. East to west, north to south, every section of that city is connected by the metro. I don't think there is any tier one city in India that can claim that we are connected 100% end to end. So I think what is happening now is that clearly companies that initially started focusing on the tier one cities, primarily because of access to talent and infrastructure, are now realizing that cities like Indore, Nagpur, Bhubaneswar, Kochi, Coimbatore, Madurai, etc. have the similar infrastructure. They have better educational facilities, they have medical facilities, and they have entertainment and lifestyle facilities, right? That's all one looks at. And they're probably one third the price of any of the tier one cities today. Now, from that standpoint, the journey to these cities has already started. It actually started 12 months back when companies who were at the front end of procuring talent were going into these cities. If you look at the US, 25, 30 years ago, there was San Francisco, New York, and Chicago. Today, there are 25 cities which can claim to be urban centers. I think similar situation will happen. And I think, as I mentioned, we are already in 17. We'll probably add another two or three cities this year. The level of companies that are setting up base here in these tier two cities is absolutely, I think, mind-boggling to say it. Just to give you an example, as one operator, I have demand of 5,000 seats for a city like Jaipur. I have no supply available.
Wow.
So that tells you where, you know, this will go. I think in the next 5 to 7 years, the tier two cities will grow at least 2x of tier one. Obviously, the base is much smaller, but I think a large portion of the 40 million to about 60, 70 million journey that everybody talks about over the next 5-6 years of consumption every year, I think a large portion of that is going to come out of tier two cities.
Any interesting nuances about work, right? And one's relationship with work, because so much of that determines, you know, not just your business, but an influx of other businesses coming into your tier two plus plus cities. Any interesting nuances, stories that you can share?
So I think, as I said, I think clearly, you know, what is happening is, if you look at the companies, they first used to concentrate on one or two large campuses, and that's where they would set up all the infrastructure. Now, when COVID hit, everybody realized that, you know, people scattered across India.
Yeah.
And that whole hybrid work today has not gone into just cities. So now there's focus on setting up not just one or two locations in a city, but 10 or 12 locations, which means work near home.
Hmm.
Second change that happened, and I think, is the move into tier two cities, where now companies are going in and saying, well, if you live out of Nagpur, I want to be closer to you, so I'll go closer to the talent. And the funny part of all of this is, until and unless you go to these cities, I mean, you will not be able to realize what's the potential of the city. As an example, you know, the best rave parties in India happen in Indore. I'm not invited to them, but, you know, it is the rave capital of India, right? You would not realize that that would happen in Indore. Like, for example, in Bhubaneswar today, the whole city is set up where the government is the largest provider of real estate in that city. They have built 25 grade A-plus facilities where they are giving rent, which is one-third of the market. Now, where in Bangalore or Mumbai will I find this, right? When you go in, those cities are gearing towards bringing people into those cities. You can feel that they're hungry to get, you know, talent, and obviously larger companies with their talent into those cities. So I think those are a couple of, you know, things which are very, very surprising, and I think very pleasantly surprising that India is growing and Bharat is growing.
Next stop, Indore rave party. That's where we'll have round two of this conversation. So speaking of tier two cities, office has major plans on expanding over the next year, targeting cities like Lucknow, Kochi, you mentioned Bhubaneswar, Ahmedabad, Jaipur, Indore, and so many more. In fact, you plan to double your portfolio by 2024 to about 250 odd centers. Where is office at the moment on this journey to achieve this goal?
So we are well on track. You know, clearly pre-COVID, every year we used to add about 4,000 to 5,000 seats. Now we add about 4,000 to 5,000 seats every month. So clearly, I think we have fast-tracked that. You know, when I went to my team telling them about that we are going to go from 50 locations, which we had built actually over the first 5 years of the journey, and I said, next 2 years, we need to be 150. They all started laughing, right? And they said, which rave party are you coming back from, right? So I think from that standpoint, very clearly, we are on that journey. We will touch 200 centers in the next 6 months. And then post that, we will go to 250. Our supply acquisition teams are extremely active. We will add maybe one or two more cities, as I said earlier, and then concentrate on expanding in our tier one locations. 80-85% growth will come from there, and 15% will come from the tier two cities. And we are at that similar scale. As I said, you know, it's just not about the center expansion. It's also about the other businesses that we have, including Transform and Care and Office Now. And those businesses are expanding at a very, very fast clip. So the idea is, you know, the concept that we look at it is of quick service real estate. So just like if you are thinking about fast food, the first brand that comes to mind is McDonald's. When you think about work, the first brand that should come to mind is Office. Second, from a platform standpoint, we want to be there for the customer when he wants us to manage his space, maintain his space, use it on demand, or basically use our space for a day and use it for 5 years. So I think we want to be there for the customer in any capacity that he chooses to work with us and providing that workspace solution.
So if we had to juxtapose this to the nature of the customer today, right? Obviously, courtesy COVID, there's been this push and pull where obviously on one end of the spectrum, you have what we discussed earlier, this decentralization, diversification of where an office is, right? And how much of it is HQ centered versus distributed across many other smaller markets and cities. The second thing that's also now happened is international companies looking at talent everywhere, right? So there's this globalization sort of network that's crept in where you've got companies from the US now having giant offices based out of India. When you look at this push and pull, this, going to where the customer is or going to where the talent is. And the second one also is giving talent the flexibility to operate from wherever they are. How do you design a workspace that caters to both of these, you know, similar but opposing forces of distributed as well as a global workforce and therefore also global and distributed companies?
So I think what COVID proved was that work could be done from anywhere, right? I think there are multiple people who came out and, you know, thought leaders in the industries and CEOs of large corporations, they said productivity has not been impacted, which is the case because we survived the experiment for 2 years almost, you know, working in some level of, I would say, a hybrid format. Clearly, technology today with Zoom and other solution tools, etc., and, you know, with the internet bandwidth speeds, with, you know, Jio coming to the market, has clearly ensured that you can be sitting from anywhere and getting your work done. Once you've done that separation, then the reality is that, you know, workspace or the space becomes a byproduct of work. Earlier it was, I have to come to office to get my work done. Now it is, I don't have to come to office to get my work done. I can get it done from anywhere. So the office has changed its meaning. And I think where it's clearly being, we see it, is that it is a place where you congregate to build your networks, to brainstorm things which can't be done remotely effectively, right? I cannot have a conversation which might be a hard conversation or a brainstorming between five people over Zoom. We all realize that that has limitations. I think so there are certain tasks which people will have to come together in wherever, whatever location, right? So clearly what we are seeing now as a trend is that at least people are asking their employees to come back at least 3 days a week. And they are creating tools, and we are obviously working with many of them to essentially create a rostering system. So I know when you're going to be there and I'm going to be there so that we can kind of congregate together and we get those days together. Second piece of it is you have to make it meaningful for me, let's say in a city like Bangalore, to spend those 3 hours on the road to come to a location, right? It has to give me amenities. It has to be interesting. It has to give me something more than what I could not get done from home. So there are companies which are offering now food, they're offering parties on Fridays, they're offering outings, etc. So obviously they're curating those areas. And ultimately, the distributed work, clearly people are looking at creating one, maybe a, you know, an ag, you can't recreate a, let's say, a 1,000-seater cafeteria everywhere. But at least what companies are now looking for is providing that flexibility and going to, let's say, operators like us who can at least provide those amenities, even if it's not an HQ location of a company. So even closer to home, you know, companies can provide that kind of infra by partnering with, you know, providers and operators like us.
No, absolutely. And, you know, taking a cue from that, and my last question for you today is, we've discussed so much, right? You've spoken about your journey from catering to MSMEs to now obviously fitting out for large MNCs, the verticalization of the workforce. If I had to ask you at a slightly more meta level, right, when you think about the future of flexible workspaces, co-working spaces, and just office at large, and you compare that to what a customer's relationship today is with their work, because work means so many different things to so many people, right? Like you said right now, in some cases, it's a way for you to network and connect. For some people, it's just a means to an end. Where do you see the future of office, and also where do you see the future of a customer's relationship with what work means to them in their life and therefore also their office space?
So I think, you know, if I was to first talk about where we think the whole office, you know, journey is going to go, and, you know, the commercial real estate workspace journey is going to go, you know, co-working pre-COVID was about a 25 million square foot industry of a billion square feet in India. Today it is 75 million. And by a recent estimate of a CBRE report, 25% of the customers are going to basically adopt flex as part of their real estate strategy. Now, if that was to happen, then this is a 200 million square foot industry in the next 4 to 5 years, right? So the future looks bright. I think we got some tailwinds. I think people have become habitual about using flex and co-working. So I think the industry is here to stay, and it will have its moment in the sun over the next couple of years. I think there's going to be very strong interest. And so I think overall, the industry will grow. And hopefully, as part of that industry being an industry leader, we will continue to grow. I think when it comes to the relationship with work, see, I think that relationship with work will always continue, right? Because the ultimate goal that all of us go through the journey of growing up and then, you know, having the vendor years and then our, you know, college years and then obviously going to work is essentially to have a meaningful lifestyle. And in a capitalistic economy, you know, you will need to make money to, you know, sustain yourself. So it's not that people will not work. I think that nature of work will change. I think some of these new technologies and new nature of work that is changing is only going to make the generation more smarter. They're only going to get their work done in different ways. One avatar of that is distributed work, which has become mainstream now. The future of work could also mean that the mundane work will get shifted to machines. So the nature of work will become much more collaborative. It will become much more focused on innovation, much more focused on, you know, developing solutions which are not able to be done in isolation. I think isolation tasks will go away. So I think as a result, the workspace that people will curate, the us spaces will become much more forefront rather than just individual me spaces. I think that at a very basic level happen. Distributed work is here to stay. I think if I was to talk about India, I think India is at least, you know, from a standpoint will overcome what probably takes in the West multiple years to develop. I think in India, that development happens very, very fast. So I think whatever is the future of work, I think India will adopt it very, very quickly.
You know, to sum all of this up, what's the one piece of advice you'd love to give entrepreneurs? Because you've obviously seen it all, right? Specifically over the past 8 years, your final piece of advice.
So I think in this environment of where we have seen a lot of companies become unicorns and then obviously now they're struggling, I think first principles is what works best. If your fundamentals at a unit economic level are clear and you're able to demonstrate that, then you are able to, should be able to scale up. So I think first principles works the best. If you are a profitable company, you will sustain yourself irrespective of funding or no funding. That's my, you know, biggest advice to, you know, entrepreneurs who are looking to get into the business.
Absolutely. And kudos to you and all that you've built with Office. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to Amit Ramani, founder and CEO of Office, for joining us on Startup Dugout by Dell Technologies. If you're an entrepreneur that's forging your path with your dreams, Dell for Startups can help you in your digital journey and transformation. For more details, check out the links in the episode description.